Hey, this is Jeff. We'll get to the show in a second. If you want to support the show or find back episodes of the show or find our other podcasts or find articles or quotes on early learning, all that kind of stuff is over at playvolutionhq.com. We're trying to curate the early learning world. Check it out. Here's the show. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson here live in upstairs studio with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And via the internet, looking on the screen, kind of like Max Headroom from the 80s, Tiffany
she
Pearsall.
She doesn't even know what that means.
I have no idea what that means. Sorry.
You totally don't know Max Headroom?
No.
Okay. There's something for you to research.
Google.
So the first question... The first thing on this sheet of the scientific process, this process for collecting information and kind of informing your practice, is ask a question. I got a question. What the fuck's that mean?
It means you have to be curious about something. Usually it's like, I wonder. I wonder statements usually do for that. Or I notice, or it reminds me of.
So
that is a direct quote from my favorite John Muir Laws, who's a naturalist. Who's mighty fine.
It's a website.
He draws a good bird.
He draws a good bird.
So I think we should propose, just for the sake of conversation, perhaps a question that guides our conversation for our listeners.
So what a practice question. So when it comes to questions, are we talking like you want
It's not questions you know the answers to.
Okay, so this is the same kind of questions. We talked about questions in kids a couple episodes ago. And so we want real questions, not phony questions that you know the answer to already.
Here's an example. I don't care if we go with it for this podcast or not.
Can't wait.
When children have ample time outside at recess, their behavior problems, quote unquote, inside decrease. That is a potential research question. If we increase the research, the behaviors inside decrease.
Increase the recess.
Increased recess leads to decreasing of, quote unquote, negative behaviors on the inside. Yeah. That is a potential research question.
I like that one. I think let's take that one and work through this. I've got more questions about questions.
Well, we can go there.
Yeah.
What are your questions about the question?
So my questions about questions are, do these need to, when you're doing this personal type of research, do they need to be big questions?
No. No, they don't. Because honestly, I think, and I've been thinking about this since you printed this out, I honestly think, and this is not me patting myself on the back, I think I was, without realizing it, going through this process when I started changing my mind as an early childhood educator. When I started wondering things, things like, I'm wondering what would happen if I just let the kids pick where they wanted to sit at the lunch table.
Yeah.
For me, that moment, it might have been a quote unquote big question, but nobody in the, Early Childhood Research Association needed me to write a report on it, but it was a big question for me at the time.
And so actually for this personal research, these can actually be very small, very personal questions you're asking and trying to answer in a organized, methodical way. And, if you're dealing with your program, why is Kimmy biting people before in late morning 3 days a week?
Because snack is late.
Well, I mean that might be the answer.
And so
I think when it comes to doing research, one thing that might scare people away from doing research is they think they need to be answering big questions. And for personal research, I think it's like Lisa says, the exact opposite. And ask questions that are going to impact the program you're running or the children you're working with or your own personal practice.
So I'm going to interrupt. Can we potentially call research a different word?
I don't know.
Does research need to be reframed? Or is that maybe conversation for another day? I don't know.
That might fall into the Tiffany overthinking category. And Lisa,
can we say that asking a question is research? Gathering data?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So maybe you don't need to be afraid of the R word?
Absolutely. Because you're just doing it on a different scale. When you read a paper from the International Journal of Play, they're doing it on this giant scale. But if you're trying to figure out why Kimmy is biting every day at 10 a.m., your scale is just different. It doesn't make it any less valid.
Oh, I love how you said that.
Kimmy is with three M's and an I-E, by the way.
Absolutely.
And an I-O-U-X.
Pretend like you're not hearing that music because it's not really playing. Nobody else is going to hear it.
Her mom's really into brush lettering.
Yeah, yeah, you know Kimmy.
I know Kimmy.
So any more talk on questions before we move on?
No, I like how you reminded the listeners that it doesn't need to be some big, huge, I'm wanting to change the industry.
Yeah, if we're calling this personal research, it can be very personal questions we're asking. So the next thing on that list is after you've come up with a question, after you ask a question, you do some background research. What's that look like?
I really like this Kimmy example because you think about, well, it's happening every day. But then you have to really think, is it happening every day? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So it's not just like come Friday, she's at dad's Thursday night and switches over to mom's on Friday. Maybe that could be part of it. Or maybe it's just the days when Johnny is here. You know, it's really making sure that you've not made an assumption in your question.
You've ruled out some of the variables.
Yeah. Yeah. And other things for that. For this particular small scale, a lot of it is previous observation and a lot of it is experience in the field, honestly.
Okay, so I'm going to share something that I haven't thought about in a very long time. When I was very, very, very first teaching in a center for other people, all of the kids started acting out really crabby every single freaking Friday morning. Friday morning, all of a sudden, all of them, it was a 3-4-year-old classroom. They were like, what? And I'm like, what the frick is going on here? And it was 2 weeks after The Simpsons premiered. And because it was the first cartoon that really wasn't designed for children, the parents thought it was for kids. So they were staying up and watching The Simpsons. So they were staying up way past their bedtime, watching stuff they probably shouldn't have been watching in the first place. So my observation, right, which led to my question, which is what the F is happening on Fridays, was the kids are staying up way too late on Thursday nights. Why is that? It's because a new show is on and the parents thought it would be appropriate for the children and it wasn't. So, I mean, I would say that without realizing it, I had conducted a little bit of research. And I'm not turning it back on me. I'm trying to show that it doesn't need to be something big and huge. I noticed something. What's the pattern? Is there data that I can use to formulate like, oh my gosh, okay, now I know. Now I can craft the intervention, which is, hey parents, I'm not quite sure if this show that you're staying up until 10 o'clock at night is one, I don't think it's really for your children because I think I've watched it and it's an adult show. And two, maybe they're staying up a little too late and they're showing up at childcare at 6 a.m. and rah, 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 rah.
Question. I think The Simpsons is a better television show for children than any of that shit Sesame Street puts out.
Well, if you're going to say it that way, I'm just saying they were going to bed. Now they're not going to bed. And then there was something that led to the behavior and what was that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of thing helps you move forward in your practice. Tiffany, when you do that background research, do you ever need to go back and revise your question at that point? Or is that part of the process of creating your hypothesis or how's that work? Do you revise the question? How do you
Usually I would describe it as refining your question. So it's like you have this big question, what's happening with Kimmy? You start to do some background research, and maybe it is happening every day at the exact same time, but you have to just prove that you're not generalizing when you make the question. So then maybe you can say, what is happening at 10 a.m. or leading up to 10 a.m. that is triggering Kimmy?
And so then you've done some research, you've come up with a question, you've crafted your question. It's become a handcrafted artisanal question. And then the next step is you create a hypothesis. And so how is a hypothesis? What's a hypothesis?
An I think statement.
A theory.
Do you turn your question into the hypothesis, or what's that look like with Kimmy? What would our hypothesis for Kimmy become?
I think she's hungry. Right? Am I off track here?
That's why she's biting at 10 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
Snack is too late.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's hungry. Yeah, just a simple statement that gets you going to the next one, or your thoughts from the previous two, and yeah.
Yeah, I got to know more about hypothesis. It sounds fancy and scary.
It's not.
A hypothesis is essentially an idea that you are looking to prove or disprove through your research. I believe, you said, an I think statement?
I was taught it's an
I believe. Yes, it's the same thing. I believe, I think. I think that she's hungry. This is why she's biting. So I have a theory, and I'm going to prove or disprove it through my source of gathering some information.
Mm-hmm. Or through essentially an answer, what your best guess is for the answer to your question.
Oh.
Yes, and this is why science is awesome, because you have to be willing to sometimes admit that you had a hypothesis that was not proven, that your hypothesis was inaccurate or false, because your data gathering did not actually prove what you thought you were looking to prove.
That's why science is awesome, is because even if you get the wrong answer, even if you do all this, and it's wrong. We gave Kimmy a bunch of snacks. She's still biting. You know that snack isn't the answer. So you can go back and say, well, what do I think the answer is now that I know that? And you can repeat the process.
Yeah. And a little bit further down on this process, we get to that process. Yeah. So it's not something you do once and are done. It's an ongoing cyclical process that you can you can invest time and energy into to find answers. And so we developed this hypothesis. Kimmy is hungry. I think Kimmy is hungry. I believe Kimmy is hungry. I believe Kimmy is getting hungry before lunch, and Justin tastes delicious. how specific do you want this to be? Very specific and focused? Do you want some wiggle room in the hypothesis? This is like one sentence, isn't it? Just a pretty short kind of thing for what we're doing, or what is it?
I mean, it can be in depth depending on what you're doing.
I think usually it's pretty general, and then you need to modify it.
Yeah.
Or make it more specific.
Okay, so we got our hypothesis with Kimmy. Our question was, what the fuck's going on with Kimmy? And we did some research, and we narrowed it down to, hey, she's biting, and hey, we think it's because she's hungry, and we came up with that hypothesis. And so the next step is that we experiment. And there's another, I mean, if hypothesis scared me, experiment is kind of another big, scary, intimidating kind of idea when it comes to this. So what's experiment mean?
It means you try something and see what happens.
That makes it sound like you're trying to, for not to be scary or something, but
it's so not.
You try something. So what's that? Yeah. What's that look like?
Move lunch up in your day.
Oh shit.
Give her an extra snack.
That came out of your mouth and your face didn't move.
Yeah, that was really weird.
It was very scary for us. So, hey, what's going on with Kimmy? Kimmy's biting. Hey, it seems to be related to food. I think Kimmy's hungry. Let's feed her earlier. That's the experiment.
Yep.
So, So do all experiments involve goldfish crackers?
Usually.
And is you toss them at the child.
Yeah. They only get to keep them if they land in their mouth.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So we just try feeding Kimmy earlier. And so yeah. how organized, thought out, complicated do we need to make this experiment? Do we try this once and then think we got the answer, or we decide we're going to try to feed Kimmy earlier for a week and see what the biting, how do we do this?
It depends on what you want to do.
Well,
it's up to you.
No, we need somebody smart to tell us. I mean,
I would reflect after each outcome and decide whether to do it again tomorrow.
Okay.
Because if we move lunch up and Kimmy still bites, I still think she's hungry. Do it for long enough to know that that's really not the answer. And then from there, I might even switch to, let's just give her a snack closer to when she comes. There's so many different ways you could, if it is hunger, there's so many different ways to get to it.
Snack could become a choice, as we've often said in the podcast.
So have we moved from experiment down to analyze the data and draw conclusions then?
Yeah. Well, because we're talking about how many times to repeat the experiment.
Well, I'm wondering about the Christmas. So the whole move lunch thing, doesn't that put into play a lot more variables, the other 10 kids in the classroom, and how messing with the time that they're used to eating lunch, just because you're trying to settle this thing out with Kimmy, that has an impact there. And then, so you got a lot of moving parts in there. When you're doing your experiment, shouldn't you try to make it as small as possible, so that you're as small and specific as possible, so that you're not interfering with other things and dealing with too many variables at once?
Yeah, I would say yes. But at the same time, like, we never said that we were moving everybody's lunch up. What if it's just Kimmy's?
Oh, well, yeah, but you said
like, I don't
know. So I don't know if we're just putting food.
What if we give the choice? We suggest food earlier and Kimmy takes us up on that choice. And instead of biting kids, she's like occupied.
So they,
I don't know.
The experiment might be, the experiment might be putting a bowl of goldfish crackers and some cheese slices out on a table at 10:15 in the morning and seeing who eats and seeing who gets bitten, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so, then the trick, I mean, It's easy to say only do so many experiments when the first time works. Let's say you move the lunch up by 30 minutes for Kimmy. She doesn't bite anybody. Awesome. You fixed it. You found the answer. You try it several more days. It works. Awesome. What's hard is when you try something and it doesn't work. You move the lunch up, Kimmy still bites. How many times are you going to sit through her still biting before you want to try something different?
Well, I'm not sure the age group that we're talking about here with moving lunch up, but I'm already back with offering a snack table for everybody earlier in the day. Like, not even lunch could potentially be like, I don't know the age group we're talking about, but that could be a set thing. But where a snack could be something that is offered earlier and for everybody. So if I notice that just the implementation of a snack has now decreased, and maybe, boom, it was successful, but I'm still going to pay attention to it. And I'm going to add to that, that you're not going to just add a snack as an option earlier than the lunch just on Monday, but Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And now that maybe is going to be a constant in this environment. And after 2 weeks, then the behavior goes away that we were troubled about. And boom, then I would say, okay, I think we might have solved our problem.
Absolutely. And what I'm saying is it's harder to figure out when to change or not change when you're basically, when you prove your hypothesis wrong, right?
Yeah.
So if moving the lunch up didn't work, if moving the snack up didn't work, how long would you continue to try that as a control? How long would you give it to work before you tried something new?
Well, in all honesty, I don't know if I would be using snack initially as my intervention. For somebody who is biting constantly, I'm going to be looking at how old this child is. I'm going to be looking at how is their speech. I'm going to be looking at, can they hear me? When was the last time we've done a hearing assessment on this child? Like, what? I'm going to be wanting to rule out some of those other variables while potentially, which to your question, Jeff, could muddy the waters a little bit because I might be unintentionally introducing more than one variable. So I don't know which one was the control and which one was working and which one, you know, you don't always know. But to this specific example of biting, it could be way more than just being hungry.
It could absolutely
be language.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm saying is, how many times would you try something that doesn't work before you give up and try something else and say like, nope, I guess, you know, we tried
this other intervention. Your relationship with the child
and the parents. At what point during this process are we calling the mom and daddy or whoever in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The relationship.
Are you seeing this behavior at home?
So isn't a lot of that taking place in the background research? In the background research, you're kind of asking yourself, well, can Kimmy hear, and is she verbal, and those kind
Good
of
point.
Things?
Like that's part of the
weed
out some of those.
I think we get to the food experiment after we've weeded out some of those things with the background research. If we're doing that background research, Kimmy's biting and, oh, she's really kind of verbally kind of behind the other kids. And we realize that at that point that maybe it's the hypothesis becomes, maybe Kimmy has a hearing problem or the biting is related to a language delay instead of being a food thing. And so that, I think that's all taking place in the background research part of it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're doing that experiment, do you need to decide then I'm going to try this for a week or I'm going to try this for 3 days or that then, or do you play that by ear or how? Because we're talking about personal and informal experimenting. Does it matter? Because there's got to be. I mean, trying it once and finding she didn't bite today. That's okay today, but that doesn't give you any long-term results. And so do you want to built in? I don't know what the research should look like and how long it should go on and if it matters and does it, I don't know.
I don't know. You have to be doing it for fun.
Meaning you what? Have to elaborate on that.
Meaning like the research that you're doing has to be for your own interest and value, and you get to be the one to decide because that's what makes it fun to me.
And I understand that, but I'm thinking about the person out there that this is scary for, that kind of needs a little bit more structure and a little bit more nudging and hand holding before they're comfortable giving this a try. And I'm wanting to bring some kind of insight to those people because not everybody is as nerdy and eager to embrace this kind of thing as some. And I just want to make sure we're offering up good ground rules for that kind of thing, I guess.
I'm going to throw some numbers out here. I think committing to a week of trying something for a week is a good amount to start on, because if you plan it accordingly, you go into the week with the commitment to do this for the week. Because if you're waffling on day one, then who's not to say that your indecision is what's causing the problem or influencing your results? You have to go in strong. This is the plan for this week. And then you have time to reflect and see how it went.
Okay. I dig that. That helps me a lot. You know what? Let's wrap this episode up here and then come back and we're going to get into the really sexy part of this. I think the analyzed data and draw conclusions. This is when I'm doing experiments, when I'm doing science, this is the point. I finish the experiment and I wipe the sweat from my brow and I slowly unbutton my lab coat and pour a drink because now it's time to analyze the data.
And so he calls Tasha. Tasha, come
analyze my data.
No, I actually was meaning that she like did the real work.
Sometimes.
This has been the Child Care Buyer and Girl podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sharing the show. Thank you for putting up with us, mostly me. Everybody else is delightful. Back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, you guys.
What?
Yes.
What?
The guy who's installing the door is like, he's been at it for 6.5 hours trying to install a door at the school. And the walls are different sizes on each side of the door. And there's just a hole in the school right now and he can't figure out what to do. So I might have to go install a door. And
how come you know how to do something that the man you're paying does not know how to do?
Her dad.
It's not my dad.
No, I mean, no, you know because of your dad.
Yes, that's why.
That's
but fine. It's also like, you just, it's not, that is 3.5. I'm just very confused.
So shall we wrap this and come back to it?
I think we'll need to.
Okay.
Because if there's no door, it's an exterior door.
Yeah,
so
you
it's
don't
just
have,
like a hole into the rain.
You don't want to have cougars in the building.
Oh,
well, you know, so is the whole fence thing. The cougars shouldn't get in, but
you gotta keep
other
these
elements.
Out.
Yeah.
And I got nowhere to be next week, so you know.
You go take care of that, and then message me tomorrow. Lisa's here Tuesday,
okay.
Wednesday, Thursday. She leaves Friday morning, some Friday sometime. So we got time. Cool. You fix the door, and we'll pick this up. Because frankly, we're old, and it's getting late here anyway. So.
I know we're ready for
okay.
Tomorrow
okay.
We're gonna take
I'll
a nap in the middle of the day.
Time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
Love you too.
Now I got to move this back over to my window so I make sure I save the recording right.
I know. I'm sorry. She's reading something. It's not
I know. I saw her. I was like, I heard that ding and I was like, oh, and I.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.